When you think of software monetization, a milk carton probably isn't the first thing that comes to mind. You might picture a familiar app nudging you to upgrade to the pro version or a subscription service locking premium features behind a paywall. But software monetization goes far beyond simple upselling. It is the invisible engine that keeps entire industries running, ensuring not just revenue but reliability, security, and business growth. Whether it's the software controlling a milk carton manufacturing line or the systems behind mission-critical operations, companies must not only create value with software but must also protect and maximize it. And in today's digital economy, failing to do so isn't just a missed opportunity, it's a direct threat to survival. I'm Steve Prentice. This is the Talis Security Sessions Bite-Size Podcast. To explain the crucial role of software monetization in your company's life, I am joined today by Dale Hopkinson, Senior Product Manager, Cloud Services at Talis. Dale, welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Steve. It's a pleasure and a joy to be here. Looking forward to our discussion today.
Software monetization is certainly an interesting title, Dale, but it's one that can be prone to individualized interpretation. A lot of people may be left with a far narrower understanding of its power within an organization. So perhaps we can start with your definition. What is software monetization and why do people need to know about it?
Yeah, you know, when people hear the word monetization, it's a fairly common word today, right? You have a lot of content creators and people selling services or software online. So everyone kind of has a concept of I have something and I want to monetize it, make money from it, right? But from our point of view, it's a little more than that. In the context of software monetization, it's really a process. It's a process about helping companies capture, protect, and maximize the value of their software, but it must lead to revenue growth. So we're not just here to help companies monetize or sell something. It's really a growth lever. Of course, most companies have a strategy and the business models they want to go to market with. But this is really how, right? How do you operationalize that? You want to go downstream or upstream to a new market. You have a strategy to do it. But how are you going to put that into place? So it's a very nuanced topic of making sure the strategy and the operational piece comes together. But the main point is really helping companies to capture, protect, maximize the value in their software that's leading to revenue growth for them.
And that means it is much more than a sales or upselling device?
You know, yes, it's a really good question because one, on a surface level, someone can say, yeah, I sold it and I'm making money and we're increasing value. Yeah, if you look at a common software, right, let's take an example. Everyone can kind of understand Netflix. So Netflix has different plans. You can have the plan that is the ad starter plan if you're okay to watch commercials when you're watching a favorite show. Or you can take the premium plan where you don't have advertisements. In those plans, there are different features or different offerings to the actual user. So when you say just sell it, you have to first know what did you sell? Which plan did you sell? And then for the user now, when you turn on Netflix, you want to make sure that you get access to the things you purchase in your plan. So that's one of those nuances. You can sell anything. But now you need some operational technology, which is a piece we provide, in how do you make sure what was sold is actually what the user has access to. So it's a little more than just selling, right? If you're a simple company, you have one software, one version, one plan, then absolutely you can just sell. But if you want to move into different markets, you want to segment your customers, one of the biggest trends in the market, which is really a newer trend, or it's an old trend that's turned new again, is what's called customers' willingness to pay. So wanting to make sure you align the price and the feature package or the plan to customers' willingness to pay. And when you start to get into those level of complexities, it is going to be a lot more than just selling.
Align the price and the feature package or the plan to the customer's willingness to pay. I just had to repeat what you said there because it is so profound. It's a different strategy from simple pricing or even KYC, know your customer. Mm-hmm, there's a dynamic element there that truly reflects the highly personalized world of service delivery that we all live in now. I'm starting to see from what you're saying an entire level or maybe even a set of levels that you are filling here for your customers as they shape their policies for their own customers.
Yeah.
You are providing the strategy for them to understand what's important.
Yes.
Now, part of your role is to represent a product called Talus Sentinel. So what do people need to know about this?
Our portfolio is the Sentinel brand, and that's the umbrella, right? So under that, before getting to the product, if we look at the key elements of monetization, so you have things like copy protection, IP protection. So companies want to make sure when they sell their software, in some cases, their IP is not going to be stolen from them. There's the ability, as just mentioned before, controlling the access to different features. You want to be able to, as you grow, diversify your revenue stream. And then when new things in the market comes like AI now, you need to think through how do we transform our business model? So those are the four core elements of just software monetization. Now I can map to them in our product. So as you rightly said, Steve, our offering is called Sentinel. And under that Sentinel sort of platform, if you think of it this way, we have a number of different tools or products in the platform that help companies achieve those four outcomes as I just mentioned. The key around what we do is called entitlement management. That's the piece, as I mentioned before, with the Netflix example, knowing what the customer has purchased. So knowing who has what, for how long, what business model, and what are their sort of availability, how should they be using it? That becomes a system of record that you can always prove. What did Steve purchase? How should he be using it, etc. So that's one module. The other module is really a licensing component. So there's a set of, think of a set of an ability to make your application speak to this backend to always validate those rights. So even we're on a software now, right? Riverside. When I log in or someone else logs in, they have a different set of rights, which is the entitlement. The application needs to now validate what should I show on the screen to Steve based on what he purchased. So that's what the licensing does. And we have a component of that. So that would sit inside the actual application and help you check and validate those particular rights. The main point of that is you want to control the feature access. You want to manage and control the usage limits. Then essentially, you want to offer a user experience based on the contract, based on the plan that they purchased. The other core piece of the platform we have is actually now, I just mentioned, you have the use rights and usage. Now, how do you get that usage data back into potentially the sales team? Because again, another key piece of software monetization is driving growth. So being able to take that usage data, we know what Steve purchased, we know how it was used, but can I share that usage information to a sales team in a sales force or where they live? So they can now begin to understand, how is Steve using the plan? Does he need to have more or less features? Should we sell a different plan? So that's a core piece. We have the analytics and insights around that. Then another core piece of the solution is integration. We know that our solution, it should sit in the middle of what was sell in the user's experience. And essentially, we're making a lot of complex things simple. So we want to be able to integrate as much as possible into your existing technical stack. So what does that mean? Automating the order. When you create an order that you sold, so you sold something, a sales order comes in or a purchase order comes in, and you want to create this order with this entitlement, we have the technology to automate that entire process. After your automation, now you need to actually turn it on so that when the user logs into the application, they have the access. So that's the process people call provisioning, turning on what was sold. We actually even automate that as well. And then the other piece I would mention as part of the portfolio is the security side. We have some companies in different verticals where they sell into an environment that's not fully trusted because they don't control it. And they want to keep their code secure. So I'll give an example. We have one of our customers are the companies that make the milk cartons. We probably ignore it all the time when we go to the grocery, but there's an expiration date. And what most people may not know is certain settings simply as the temperature in the factory that created that carton may alter the expiration date. How fast the process is running to make the cartons on the conveyor belt may alter the expiration date. So they control certain things in the IP that they leverage our technology, and that makes sure that once they sell their software, it cannot be changed because, of course, tons of liability is sold to that. So the technical side of the solution makes sure that nothing in your code can be changed once you deploy it to your customers. So again, so it's the security piece, the automation piece, the key piece about licensing and entitlement that sits under what we call Sentinel.
This is a great case study, simply because it is not as high-tech as Netflix or Microsoft, even though we will be talking shortly about a couple of your clients in those areas as well. But milk cartons, they are such a great symbol of the industrial ecosystem that people rely on each day without even realizing it. And as you said, a slight variance in their production process can jeopardize the entire thing. Mm-hmm. So this isn't just simply an add-on. This is a valuable component of the project, and certainly well-named as a sentinel. So where do you go to talk about this solution? Who do you like to speak to?
We have a lot of variants. We have strong sectors for us tend to be industrial automation. We have also medical companies, whether they're medical devices or medical imaging and diagnostics. A lot of companies who are just enterprise B2B software, right, in quite a number of spaces. The trend, I would say, between these companies that we speak to, they've grown beyond one product. They're now a portfolio, or they have multi-product, and they're looking to become a platform. And that can either be through just innovation or M&A. They're looking at how do they explore multiple market segments. So they're either upstream and want to go downstream, or downstream and want to go upstream. And they're thinking about how do we sell differently, right? How do we, as we uncover even segments and sub-segments and with our existing customer base, how do we create a new offer with the existing technology? It's those questions that begin to drive the level of complexity for need, for not just security, right, as I just mentioned, but also in changing the business model. One of the most interesting trends that I see and I particularly love covering and speaking about today is what is known as go-to-market agility. So we've optimized for agility in engineering. We've optimized for agility in the back office and operations. But something as simple as recognizing and responding to a market trend to change, for example, wanting to change from user-based license to usage-based license. In most organizations, that change of a business model would take somewhere between 6 to 9 months for a lot of reasons. And this go-to-market agility, as companies begin to focus on that, because they're competing more on the business model, these become the people we speak to. And from a persona perspective, usually the project drivers are, you'll have the product leaders, revenue growth leaders. And interestingly enough, I've began spending a lot of time with CFOs last year and getting good relationship with a few of them, you know, trying to understand a bit. And I've seen as CFOs sort of change and shift to being more strategic, they're becoming very focused on not just monetization, but the systems that drive monetization. And here's a key reason. As companies now shift and try to sell in multiple channels, whether it's selling direct through their sales team, D2C, direct to customer, selling online through channel partners and now marketplaces, each of those different sales routes and routes to market has multiple challenges. But for a CFO, it could mean that every single sales route means a separate and unpredictable revenue recognition process. And I joked with one, right? I used to run our cloud platform. I mean, I was the one responsible for making sure what was sold was turned on. That's the trigger to recognize revenue. And one quarter, I was literally up at 11:59:59 with teams in India making sure we can provision and turn something on so we can recognize revenue, right? So knowing what the CFO is thinking about is very interesting to spend a lot of time with those folks last year.
Yes, it certainly is a C-suite level concern. Basically, the entire future of a company is at stake, and you are holding it in your hands.
Yes.
One of your clients, the healthcare company Lunit, they have a video on YouTube talking about how you worked with them during their IPO. They were enjoying substantial growth and were getting a lot of attention. So let's just dive a little deeper into the Lunit story. With them, you were seeing not just the development of a groundbreaking healthcare technology, but also that huge leap that many entrepreneurs dream of, to go public and to enjoy access to lots of money to play with. So how did you help Lunit during this significant chapter of their lives?
Yeah, you know, we have some amazing companies I mentioned before across verticals. And one of our key verticals we're beginning to see now is growth, of course, in the AI space, specifically in the medical field. And for me, that's actually an area of interest I keep following. This company named Lunit, first, they're just doing some amazing things. They're looking to identify and detect cancer much earlier so they can save lives. So when I first hear a story like that and help a company like that, it really just reminds me, wow, how important this work can really be. For Lunit, I mean, their software is so good. They've been tapped by the World Health Organization to be, I think, the one of the only or the only company that's scanning for tuberculosis around the world. So that's how high quality their solutions are. So for them, they wanted to solve a few things. They wanted to go public, and they also wanted to sell in multiple markets. So as a medical company, compliance and security is core to what you do. If you cannot make sure that what you produce is secure and compliant, you're going to have a lot of problems medically and reputationally. So on one level, they wanted to make sure that they were simply protecting, and of course for their business, they wanted to protect their IP. So they had a need to make sure that regardless of where they deploy their software, they're deploying in environments they control or don't control, they're always going to have a certain peace of mind that the outcomes of the software is going to be exactly what they mean it and want it to be, because they have such assurance that that code has not been altered, hacked, or cracked in the field. So that's one. The second is they were looking at, well, how do we have this flexibility and this agility to price and package in multiple ways, right? So again, the price is a number, the package is what are those features that we're bundling together for that price. They knew that as a company shifting to different markets, you'll do your great research and analysis, but it's usually impossible to fully predict what's going to be the best price and plan in that market. So you need to go through a cycle of iteration. That's something they wanted to do without changing software. So companies today, to give you a key insight why that's critical, most companies today, they actually have their own engineers code the price, package, and entitlement logic. So these things that's needed to have this go-to-market agility. If it's hard-coded with your source code, every time your go-to-market team has a change, you need to request some engineer. Not terribly bad because you can code anything, right? But the problem is there's usually never any alignment with your engineering development cycle and the go-to-market learning things in the market, right? So it becomes a quite disruptive process, which is why I mentioned to you that takes 6 to 9 months. So Lunit wanted to decouple those two things. They wanted to give their go-to-market teams the ability to, as they explore new markets, they can grow. That doesn't disrupt engineering from creating amazing software. So they, of course, we didn't know at the time, but this was serious for them because they were looking at going public. And I can imagine being able to talk about how you're expanding to different markets and your growth plan. Again, operationalizing the growth plan for someone was a key success area for them as they went public. So they've went on to, of course, go public, leveraging our technology and having some great success, and continue to iterate and find new sales channel through partners, as I mentioned. So they're now looking at even growing. How do we grow at scale? How do we sell with multiple channels and different areas, but have that assurance on IP protection from Talis Sentinel, as well as the ability to alter and change business models as they see fit to continue growing?
Dale, you are painting a picture here of not so much about why someone should think about wanting this product, but how they could even consider going ahead without it. And you yourself are someone that people would turn to as a trusted advisor to help them not just run their business, but grow it and control it.
And no, I was going to say that's actually interesting, the good for humanity, but also sort of both sides of the spectrum, right? One is the, like you said, the behind the scenes industrial automation you never see, and Lunit is cutting edge technology. So one of the things that, you know, I think about is how applicable this is, and the key for many companies, regardless of if it's a old school kind of company or even the new cutting edge kind of companies.
This is classic quality management brought into the AI era. It reminds me of the best of TQM and Kaizen. And that's something that every C-level executive needs to pay attention to. So what else can you share about Talis Sentinel or about the process that you undertake with your clients?
One interesting thing in markets, I was talking to a couple of founders in this space, and we kind of joke and said, you know, we're the cool kids on the block now, right? And we were kind of asking, well, why is that? Monetization has been around for a long time, that the products of Talis have gone back 30 plus years to a few acquisitions. And in kind of thinking through market trends and why we're popular and sort of in demand, and there's venture capital money in this space, there's a few things that came up with the speed of innovation. It's so simple to create products these days, and everyone kind of has that figured out, or you can have AI to help you figure that out even faster. But how do you really return value on an investment, whether you bootstrap or you raise money or you're an entrepreneur and you've gotten funding from your leaders? And this is the key now, right? In addition to you zoom out and you look at some economics, the cost of capital is much higher. So the growth at all cost days, they're long behind us, even though hypergrowth is still coming back. And when companies think about growth, there's really three things you can ever do in a business. You can acquire new customers, you can retain those customers, or you can monetize them. And monetization is always the most efficient growth lever. So as companies look for more efficient growth, it leads them to these kinds of thoughts and strategies, right, that they've not explored deeply before because they've gotten by simply growing top line. When you were a startup company, the metric of value was monthly active users. And as revenues and metrics shift to NRR, net retention revenue, companies have to answer the fundamental question, how are we growing the customer lifetime value over time? Sure, you can continue innovating and create new products and add new products, but there's a cost for that. There's a cost for every feature you create in your product. And monetization is a thing now that helps you create responsible returns, right, on that investment. You know, as a product manager in the past, I was responsible for creating new products in the offer. You know, I have a mind of an analyst and an investor, so I'm always thinking ROI, these things. I used to think, I wonder what's the ROI of this product? And I took it a step further and I said, well, this new feature that we created, there was such a long roadmap and investment effort, and we celebrated it. We had a public release and announcement. And I did some research and had some dashboards created to see just the adoption. And I said, wow, adoption was very low. And I said, how can I make sure I'm driving more value for the inputs that I'm creating? So, yeah, so when companies begin thinking more like this, right, this is where the need for monetization pops up. And then, like you mentioned before, Steve, looking at all those nuances and the pieces in between of, well, how do we really operationalize? I want to take my software and sell it differently in three markets. Yeah, that's a great strategy. But how do you operationalize that to the point that it's going to enable scalable growth and not just do it in a one-off manner where it sort of brings everything to a slow grinding halt?
I've got to say, this process really implants greater legitimacy into the term monetization, at least from an outsider's perspective. As I said at the start of our conversation, the term is often taken to represent that short-form transactional mindset, like moving from freemium to pro-level subscription, or maybe customizing a viewer's membership preference on a platform like Netflix. Nothing wrong with any of that, of course, but you've shown us just how the software monetization strategy builds up and out from within an organization across a range of channels, making a real full use of the current and future potential of their technologies, along with the strategies for ongoing market success. Dale, it's been a total pleasure learning from you today, and when I stop off to pick up milk on the way home today, I will not bother to check the expiration date. I don't think I need to anymore. So thank you for joining me on the Talos Security Sessions bite-sized podcast today.
Yeah, it's been my pleasure, Steve. Looking forward to doing this again and hoping this drives lots of traction and information for our listeners today.
My thanks once again to Dale Hopkinson, Senior Product Manager, Cloud Services at Talos. Remember, if you like what you hear, be sure to subscribe and tell a friend or a colleague or a client or all of them about the Talos Security Sessions podcast series. And join the conversation on LinkedIn. Just search for Talos Cloud Security and watch for our podcast posts. We will be back again soon with another episode and another discussion on the topics that you need to know about to successfully carry on in the business of information security. Until then, I'm Steve Prentice. Thanks for listening.